This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast with brand and content mavens Kevin Skerritt and Amy Zander, diving into all things that will make your brand powerful beyond imagination.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is Kevin Skerritt, and with me again, I've got Amy Zander. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Kevin.
So last time we talked about the idea of what an archetype is, and that's basically the whole point of this entire podcast. And last time we said that we were going to take a little bit deeper dive into archetypes, and in future episodes, we're going to take much deeper dives into each one of them. So I guess today we're going to talk a lot about archetypes, about the highest level and all the 12 basic archetypes.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this conversation. When I first start talking to people about archetypes and introduce the concept, usually people's eyes light up and they start really connecting with it because, as we're going to find out in a few minutes, archetypes are just universally understood, and we all automatically know about them without having to think about it. So that's why they're very powerful for marketing.
Right. And I think that's a really important point, that there are a couple of kind of key attributes of what defines an attribute, or what defines an archetype, and universal understanding is one of them. So we have to go way back to the early 1900s. Psychologist Carl Jung came up with this concept of archetypes. He's the one who coined the term. And he didn't explicitly talk about individual archetypes except for a handful, like the everyman he referred to, which we refer to as the neighbor. But he wrote books on this concept and took very, very deep dives into defining why these ideas are important to human beings and in the world of psychology. So we don't want to get too esoteric and take a psychology analysis, but it is a good thing to understand what an archetype is and why it's important to marketing. So like you said, the emotions, if we go with Carl Jung's definition of an archetype, it needs to be a powerful emotional feeling, that these are the most powerful emotions that human beings can understand. So combination of power, the fact that it's an emotion, the fact that it's universally understood, and if we list these attributes of archetypes, well, that list kind of sounds like what I want for my company too. I want my company and my products and services to be universally understood. I want to be able to connect with people powerfully. I want to be able to connect with them emotionally. And there's just a lot of power if you're able to do that.
Exactly. And one of the other things that's really interesting is that all 12 of these archetypes that we're about to define are inside all of us. And so lots of times we're asked by companies, well, is there a certain archetype that's best for my company? And our answer is no, they're all really good. It just one might resonate with you more than the other, but any of these can be taken and used by any company and made into a very powerful brand.
Right. And in those exact same conversations with my clients, one of the things that I point out to them is that the best selection for them is the one that they will best be able to embrace as an organization. Sometimes that's directed by the president or the CEO of the company. Sometimes that's best directed by the brand evangelist or the VP of marketing. It really doesn't matter who is launching the initiative of defining this. But once a decision is made, you have to get the entire team on board so that they understand what archetype is going to be applied to their company, and everybody then should be able to embrace it, because as human beings, we understand all of these things very easily, right?
Yep, that's great. So let's start talking about all 12 archetypes. These are the main archetypes, and there are sub-archetypes of these 12, which we're not going to go into in this podcast. This is just the 12 main ones.
Right.
So Kevin, you want to start with the first one?
Yeah, and we're going off the same list, I believe. So let's just go down the list, and we'll kind of take turns here. So the first one on our list is called the innocent archetype. And an interesting point is that every single word in any language has nuance. It has baggage. It has very specific meaning. And because of that baggage, sometimes alternative or different words can be beneficial. And so we struggle a lot with trying to figure out which word is best to convey what the overall idea is of an archetype. So in this first one, the innocent archetype, we sometimes refer to it as the angel archetype. And so which word you use really doesn't matter, as long as you understand that you're talking about this concept of innocence and simplicity. The ideas that really are contained in this archetype are family values and removing chaos from your life and just having this inner peace. So as I'm saying all these things, you immediately get the idea of what you're trying to convey. That's a really powerful emotion. Removing chaos from people's lives and making them feel like they have a sense of inner peace, that's powerful stuff. And so when we think about great brands that do this really well, like Coca-Cola, you know, it's a 120-year-old brand, I think, late 1800s when they started out. And except for just a handful of veering off the tracks a little bit, they have stayed very true to that concept through the entirety of their existence. And when you look at their taglines, when you look at their commercials and how they portray themselves in all our advertising and marketing, it's not a surprise that they're as powerful as they are, because they stay so true to this family values, innocence, and removing chaos, childlike ideas, right? So the next one we have... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to add, like, sharing Coke with a friend, going back to simpler times.
Yeah.
You know, we all remember having a Coke as a kid.
Yeah.
I always think, personally, when I think of the innocent or the angel, I always think about how I felt when I was a child.
Right.
I didn't have a lot of things to worry about. Life was pretty simple.
Right. And then we can go into much deeper analysis when we get around to talking just about the innocent archetype. But the classic example of what not to do is with Coca-Cola. They veered away from the innocent archetype when they tried to launch the new Coke. Reformulation, new marketing, exciting.
Terrible.
And it was a terrible idea. And they recovered from themselves, from their error, by going back to Coke Classic, which the word classic just directly hits the target again of innocence and goes back to their roots, which was a beautiful thing to watch. Okay,
right.
So our next archetype, if you could review the neighbor for us.
Sure. So the neighbor archetype is one that I personally resonate quite a lot with. It's sometimes also referred to as the everyday girl or everyday guy. So you're just going to think about what you think about when you think about a neighbor. It's somebody that you can have a barbecue with, easygoing, talk about, you know, borrow the lawnmower from. There's a sense of trust there. It's just an easygoing, no frills kind of archetype. And some of the two major powerful companies that use this very well are Wendy's. The owner of Wendy's, Dave Thomas, kind of oozed the whole archetype or idea of a neighbor. He was friendly. He was like a grandpa, just easygoing. And then another really powerful brand is also like the Maytag man. He was a trustworthy guy that you would let into your house to, you know, fix your appliances, friendly, smiley, that kind of thing. So, that's the basis of the neighbor archetype.
Yeah, and definitely the Maytag man and Dave Thomas with Wendy's when he was alive. These are not supermodels. These are not
right.
Olympic athletes. They're just average Joes. And so, the concept of trustworthiness is a huge part of the neighborhood. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But other ideas within the neighbor are simplicity, being laid back,
relatable,
unpretentious. This archetype allows you to use slang, and even though you want to be grammatically correct, you can use incomplete sentences and fun ways of weaving your words together in the ways that people speak, not necessarily the formal King's English. And you can get away with that because you're trying to imbue your marketing with this neighborly kind of feel. So,
great. And then the next one is one of our favorite ones to talk about. I'll let you talk about the hero archetype.
The hero. The hero, I think, is the one archetype that the most people are drawn to because it feels like that's what marketing should be. And as I say the word hero, you kind of get the idea of, you know, Superman or some superhero with a blue cape and, you know, spandex leggings and, you know, a big letter on their chest. Well, yeah, that's kind of it too. But it also includes the big ideas of efficiency and productivity and
solving problems,
saving the day, and being a solutions-oriented company. And now when you talk about great brands that fall within the hero, the very obvious one is Nike, where they are arguably one of the strongest brands in the world, but it's only because they stay so true to this archetype. You never, ever, ever see Nike make a mistake in their marketing. They are always portraying themselves as connected to Olympic athletes and successful athletes and champions and winners and athleticism and youth.
Sweaty people.
Yeah, sweaty people. Michael Jordan flying through the air in slow motion, right?
Right.
So having that super high energy approach with all of these ideas, there's a lot of people who are drawn to this archetype. And I think probably like a third to a half of all consultants, you know, private consultants, whether they're business consultants or leadership consultants or career coaches or, you know, any type of single person operation where they're doing consulting, they're almost always drawn to this in some way or fashion. And you kind of have to get them to back off of that because all of their competitors are doing the same thing. And so when we take a deeper dive, we're going to get into this idea of what our competitors are doing and should we be doing the same thing. So the next archetype is the mother archetype.
Right. So the mother, or sometimes it's called the caregiver archetype.
Yeah.
If you ask everybody in the world what a mother is, people are going to use similar words all over the world, like caring, supportive, nurturing, things like that. It's really easy to understand this. A lot of going with what you're just saying, the healthcare industry is often really drawn to this archetype because it is nurturing and caring and things like that. It's a lower energy archetype. One of the best known brands for this archetype is Campbell Soup. So if you think about Campbell Soup, the good, comforting, you know, snowy day tomato soup kind of thing. And also in a lot of their ads, they had us, you know, NFL players and football players, but who did they have right alongside those guys?
Grandma.
Yeah, their moms and their grandmas eating the soup. So that's a really easy way to understand the mother archetype. But Campbell Soup does a really good job with that.
Right. And because mothers are usually being mothers to children, there's this almost direct connection between the mother archetype and the innocent archetype. And we're going to see that as a common theme throughout all of these, that if you're drawn to one, you're probably going to be drawn to more than one for similar reasons. And we're going to get into that a lot when we get into the individual archetypes in upcoming episodes. So I'm excited to do that.
Yeah, that's a good point. The next one is the explorer. I'm going to let you talk about that. And that is also, I just want to make up the point that as we talk about the explorer, that is what our company brand archetypes, that's what our archetype is for our company is the explorer.
Right. And even though we're not going to go into a deep analysis of sub-archetypes, it is interesting to point out that most of these archetypes do have a couple of big ideas within them, and the explorer is one of them. So the explorer could be the physical exploration of the world, or the not-so-obvious approach would be to portray the explorer as a way to explore ideas that are worthy of your attention, or higher level or higher cost products and services that you think that you are deserving of. So this idea of I deserve something, or I'm willing to pay more for something because I'm worth it, directly taps into the explorer, but it also removes the company and their products and services from the issue of price. If you're battling a competitor and you guys are going head to head and you're in this downward spiral of of trying to beat each other on price. Well, I would suggest that if you adopt one of these archetype ideas powerfully, that you can break away from that and start charging more. So let me give you an example. We've talked about the neighbor archetype earlier, right? If I point out to you that Dunkin' Donuts, as a place to buy donuts and coffee, is a place where you drive through the drive-through window and pick up your coffee on the way to work, that feels very neighborly, right? And you know, the guys in the plumbing trucks and the electricians, they're doing the same thing, and they get their box of Joe, right? So Dunkin' Donuts is an awesome neighbor archetype.
Right. They have two choices, regular or decaf.
Yeah, that's it. And those are your only choices, right?
Right.
And if you go inside, you know, I don't know why you would want to do that, but it's a small little place, and it's formica everywhere, and it's bright lights and a little kid in a paper hat, and it's narrow counters, and it's not inviting, really. But let's now take a look at the flip side. The Explorer brand would be Starbucks coffee. So you go into Starbucks, and it's an oasis. It's super high ceilings and the mahogany walls and the brushed metals and the high stools and the couches and the big wide counters. And they're not clerks, they're baristas. And instead of getting regular decaf, you know, I don't know what you get, Amy, but when I go to Starbucks, I get a venti, cappuccino. I forget what, I have to actually look at the board. And a sprinkle of cinnamon. And why do I get that? And more to the point, why do I spend three times as much for this coffee as I do at Dunkin' Donuts?
Because you deserve it, Kevin.
I'm worth it, Mamie.
I am
worth paying $3 or $4 for a coffee that I could get for a dollar somewhere else. So that's an awesome archetype if you are desiring to go upscale, charge more for your products and services, but you really do have to have a product that other people will see as worthy of that, right?
Right. And I just want to mention before we go on to the next one that you had touched briefly on the physical exploration of the world, and that would be the other side of the Explorer, which could be like Jeep,
yeah.
For instance, where you're driving out in the rugged terrain and things like that. That's a perfect
right.
example.
Travel companies.
Right, travel, yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Yep. Okay, the next one, you can start us out with the Outlaw.
Yeah, the Outlaw. So this is a fun one. It is about breaking the rules, wind in your hair, you know, doing things outside of the box. It's a pretty attractive one for some companies. It's not always popular, but a couple people that have done a really good job with this, or businesses rather, are Harley Davidson, mm-hmm. perfect example of the Outlaw. You know, literally driving with the wind in your hair. And then one that might not be so obvious is Apple. They just have done everything differently, you know, instead of five buttons, there's one button. Instead
right.
of a gray computer, they have cool colored computers. They've always strived to do everything really differently than the status quo.
Yeah, I'll throw in a third one, Tesla, you know,
ooh,
Elon Musk. And the reason I throw that one in is when we start taking a deeper dive into the sub-archetypes, the Outlaw has three sub-archetypes. One is the rule-breaking rebel, the other is the risk-taking gambler, and the third is the innovative innovator. So
right.
Harley Davidson, the first one that you talked about, fits right in with the rebel sub-archetype. Steve Jobs and Apple fits in very obviously with the innovator, and Elon Musk and Tesla are definitely risk-takers.
Yep, that's a great example. And then the next one is the Lover.
The Lover. And let me go back to Outlaw just for a little bit, because
sure.
we have the same issue as Lover. Remember I said that words have meaning and they have nuance and they have baggage. Well, a lot of people, when they hear the concept of the Outlaw and then we use the phrase rule breaking or bending the rules, they don't want to go there with their business because they feel that that has a negative or pejorative idea, and they don't
right.
want to base their marketing on something that's pejorative. So they kind of avoid it, where there's a lot of power there. A very similar thing happens with our next archetype, the Lover, where we talk about passion, or when we just say the word lover, they go, ooh, I don't want to do that. I want people to think that I'm, you know, trying to do things that revolve around sex. Well,
right.
we can give dozens and dozens of examples, you know, pick a perfume commercial, you know, or a a lot of fashion companies like Calvin Klein, famously with Brooke Shields back in the day, they sell their product with sex, and they do it very successfully. Why? Because sex sells. Sex is such a powerful human emotion that if you can connect your brand to that idea, you don't really have to be afraid of being offensive to people. All 7.5 billion people on the planet are really designed to have sex. That sex is a part of living, right? But right. There is the flip side of the lover, which is also has to taps into the most basic idea of the lover, the idea of passion. So certainly there is passion within the concept of sex, but there's also passion within the concept of romance. And so the romantic ideas are also contained in the lover, and brands like Hallmark will be obvious to everybody when we say romance and then Hallmark. So if you disconnect the ideas of sex or romance and really focus on the main idea of passion, passion for your industry, passion for serving people, passion for building really awesome products and services, passion for the customer service. There, anything that you're passionate about can be used in the lover.
Yeah, and for the mutual client of ours, I was really surprised when we went through the brand archetype discovery session with them. This was a hunting group. And I know you weren't as surprised as I was, Kevin, because yeah. You've been doing this a lot longer than I have. But these hunting guys actually, talked a lot about the different archetypes, and they landed on the lover because they are so passionate about hunting and conservation and things like that, that's the one that resonated with them. And that was a surprise to me, but it really works. They're doing a really good job, and the website you created for them is beautiful and has lots of reds and whites and really nice colors in them. And they're doing a really good job with that. But that was, I just didn't think a bunch of old hunters would pick that. And it was pretty cool to see them making that work really well.
Well, our listeners may not know that both of us are from Central Michigan, and we're here sitting in Central Michigan, right in the smack in the middle of hunting season.
That's true, right now. Yeah.
And boy, let me tell you, the passion for the whole concept of hunting, whether you like it or not, you have to acknowledge that hunters are passionate, absolutely
That's
passionate
true.
About getting
That's
out in the open and breathing that fresh air and camaraderie and. In Michigan, you got to eat some pasties and play some euchre. And for people,
medicine stew.
For people who don't know what those things are,
Google it.
Google it. That's right. Okay, so our next archetype is artist or the creator archetype.
Yeah.
That's an alternative name.
Yeah. So I'll give this one a shot. So the artist or creator is kind of self-explanatory. It's really creative, artistic. They're creating things, making things beautiful. A couple good examples of this would be Crayola crayons, mm-hmm. or Sesame Street is another one where they're teaching kids how to learn in a lot of different varieties and really creative ways.
I'm not sure if they're even around anymore, but when I first started this process 15 some years ago, one of the best examples of the artist archetype or the creator is Swatch watches. And since the advent of the cell phone, the vast majority of people are no longer wearing wristwatches, but they're coming back. Just in the last year, the number of wristwatch companies and advertisements and people talking about wristwatches, it's becoming a new fashion thing that people are wearing timepieces on their wrists. And when you do a little Google searching of new companies that are creating wristwatches, they're fascinating, the design and the creativity that goes into these things. But it's not to say that you got to be a wristwatch company. You can be any company that has a creative idea or a creative process or a creative approach to solving problems. Anything that taps into creativity. And thanks for bringing up Crayola, the parent company Binney and Smith, a Canadian company that makes Crayolas. Actually talking to their vice president of marketing actually confirmed that that's exactly how they think about their company. It's not about the product. It's not about wax pencils. It's about kids being creative and learning creativity by using their products, which is a beautiful idea, right?
Yep. And we all know we've all used Crayola crayons.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah. All right, Kevin, it worked out perfectly that you get to talk about this next archetype, the Jester.
I was hoping that was going to happen, and when we started the list, I actually went down and I was doing a little inner cheer. I get to do the Jester. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Jester is about fun, of course. Everything that a Jester does is fun outwardly. So there is that aspect, family fun, physical fun, humor, any type of company that uses humor in their marketing is in some way or form tapping into the Jester. But there's another side of the Jester that has more to do with brash, bold, fresh, outrageous, crazy a little bit. That kind of outrageousness comes across really well in marketing because it catches people's attention. There's an absolute energy about it that's infectious, that when you watch these commercials, you get jazzed up and you get the humor in it. So this bold and brash approach and just the feeling of fun and humor and laughter that you get from watching companies do this, because of how effective it is, when one company starts to see some success by using the Jester archetype, invariably you see their competitors jump in and try to emulate them. And the best example of this is Aflac, the supplemental insurance company. Now, when you think supplemental insurance, you're probably not thinking, wow, that's really fun. But when they came up with the idea of the talking duck, Aflac, the concept worked so well and helped hook people with this humorous, fun, new mascot that the duck itself doesn't sell the insurance, but it definitely makes them memorable. And since the success of Aflac, we now have Flo with Progressive, we have Mayhem with Allstate, we have the Gecko and the Goat with Geico. It seems like all insurance companies now are tapping into the Jester, and at some point, someone's going to have to break away because you don't want to go head-to-head with your competitors. You want to be different. So the Jester is really fun. Now, one thing I will say about the Jester is it's one of the archetypes that you have to go all in on, where all of these, the more you embrace it and the more you go all in, the more success you will see. But the Jester especially, you can't be kind of a Jester. And I'm sure that you've watched commercials where you got about 3/4 of the way through the commercial and you're kind of smiling, and then at the end of the commercial they cue up the laugh track and they throw the zinger at you and you go, ha, ha, ha.
Right?
Yeah.
The worst.
Yeah, it's the worst. And it's they were just too cautious and they just didn't put themselves out there. They were trying to be a Jester. They weren't being a Jester, right?
Right.
So yeah, you gotta embrace all of these. If you're gonna embrace them, go for it, right?
Yeah, we have a local company in the Lansing Grand Ledge area that's a car dealership called Sundance.
Yeah.
And the Terry Hanks, the owner, is all Jester. He does commercials, radio spots. He doesn't even practice them. Just whatever comes to the top of his mind, he throws out there. And he's got horses in his videos, and he just does such a great job of that. It's always crazy and unexpected.
Now, here's an interesting thing. I agree with you wholeheartedly that Terry Hanks and his entire marketing approach embraces wildly the Jester. And if you ask a person in the Lansing area about Sundance Chevrolet, they'll say, oh God, I hate those commercials. And yet, ask the same person, name another car dealership in Lansing, and they won't be able to, just because it's just so powerful. And I think that he could be funnier instead of crazier, but man, he pulls off the crazy really, really, really well.
Sorry, yes, he does.
Sorry to insult you if I did, Terry.
No, I don't know him personally, but I think he'd be just fine with that.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. Yeah, he does a great job. Okay, yeah. The next one is the sage archetype or guru.
Yeah, the sage or guru. So if you can picture a guru on the top of the mountain distilling, you know, wise advice, it's a lower energy archetype. It's somebody that you would go to for good advice, sound advice, lots of trust there. An example of that would be the Wall Street Journal. They've been known for their, you know, solid reporting. They can back up their stuff. People, you know, they're seen as a source of good news. Another more relatable one might be Oprah. Oprah is the sage. She's just got a lot of good advice. She's, she champions women and those kinds of things. And so if you're looking for a lower energy archetype that has a lot of knowledge and wisdom, this is a good one for you. A lot of lawyers maybe gravitate towards the sage as kind of a natural fit. But I'm working currently with a lawyer who has decided to choose a different archetype.
Good.
And she's doing a really, really good job with it. She's got a lot of fun videos on her Facebook page and things like that. And she's just higher energy than the sage is.
Yeah. So the other concepts that fall inside the sage are information management or processes or data or, being meticulous and linear and methodical. So you put all these things together and you realize that a person who is going to effectively pull off the sage or guru archetype really has to have knowledge and experience. You can't fake this one. So if you're a brand new, ripe, fresh face, out of college, 23-year-old that's starting up your own company and you're trying to portray yourself as the highly experienced, wise guru archetype, you might not be the best face of your company yet because it might not come across as authentic. So I'm not saying that exclusively, but it's certainly something to consider when you're trying to pick your archetype.
Makes sense. The next one we're going to talk about is the magician.
So the magician archetype is another one of these archetypes that has multiple names. We have a problem with the baggage with the word magician is that it kind of conjures up ideas of old dudes with long white beards and pointy hats and carrying around sticks with a star on the end of them and they're waving it around and, pixie dust
like
is flying everywhere. Like Gandalf, right?
Gandalf.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, well, I don't want to equate myself with old dudes with long white beards. So what you have to realize is that in the magician archetype, really the concepts are either magic, things that are magical, that their nature is magical, or the other much bigger concept is change or rebirth, being a
transformation
or being a change catalyst, right? So if I say the product name Calgon, which is the classic magician archetype for people who are old enough to remember the commercials from back in the 70s and 80s, the immediate thing that pops into your head is their tagline, take me away.
Calgon, take me away.
Right, and then you have the housewife who slips into a bathtub and her crazy chaotic day it dissolves away and you hear the chimes, going and she's transformed and she's now on a hammock, on some Caribbean
right.
beach. And it's bath soap, people. It doesn't
right.
actually do this. You don't get free rides to the Caribbean by buying Calgon's bath soap. But that's what they promise to you. That you're not going to actually go to the Caribbean, but you're going to feel this way. We're going to transform how you feel. And that's a powerful thing, changing someone's life to the better through your product, even if it's as silly as and simple as something like bath soap.
Right. Or I can't believe it's not butter.
I can't believe
that's
it's not
another
butter. That's right.
Right.
Right. Okay, and the last one is the ruler archetype.
So the ruler is one that is about, as you can imagine, a ruler. This archetype is just, they're an industry expert. It's kind of our way or the highway. You either believe us or you don't. We don't really care if you don't, and we know best kind of thing. Some examples of that would be IBM or General Motors or Microsoft.
Yep. So they're prominent players in their space, obviously. I think other big ideas that you would find in the ruler are power and dominance. Now, interestingly, the idea of leadership you would think falls under the leader, but it doesn't. It falls under the hero because heroes lead other people. And it's a very people-oriented person. Saving people, saving the day is a thing that you're doing for others. And that's what heroes do. Rulers lead other people, but they don't care whether you follow them or not. If you don't follow me, you're an idiot. If you don't buy my product, you're an idiot. And it's that brash. It's that in your face. It's It's dominance and power are the big ideas. We are the dominant player. We are number one, and buy our stuff. That's what their pitch is. Okay, so we did talk a lot about the sub-archetypes as we were going through these, but I think we're going to save that for at least another session where we can take a deeper dive. And of course, as we go into each individual archetype, we're going to talk about the sub-archetypes as well.
Right, exactly. And we touched a little bit on the energy levels of some of these archetypes. And we're going to talk about that when we talk about each individual one as well. Some of them have really high energy levels, like the jester, the hero, which we talked about, and some have really low energies, like the innocent and the sage, and other ones just kind of fall right in the middle.
Right. It's not either high or low. It could be either. Right.
Right.
Another concept I think is really important. We didn't really talk about a lot. We did a little bit with the neighbor and the sage, but trustworthiness. If you have a competitor that is a little sketchy and they have a reputation, you can pick an archetype like the regular guy or the neighbor, and it is just infused with trustworthiness because you're just so easygoing and unpretentious. There's a huge level of trustworthiness built into that archetype. And similarly, the sage or guru archetype, the trustworthiness is not tied to familiarity like the neighbor. It's tied to trust that their knowledge and experience is going to be beneficial to you. So all of the archetypes I have with these issues of energy level and trustworthiness, it's interesting to note how they all play out. Like the outlaw has like zero attention to trustworthiness. It's not that you are untrustworthy, but it's just not a big part of who they are, right?
Right. So that's something that we help our clients and people that are trying to figure their archetype think about all those things as well. And speaking of that, if you're interested in what archetype you might be, or you want to play around with it, we have a great questionnaire on our website that you can take. It's several questions. You just answer them thinking about your company, and then it will list the 12 archetypes in order that are most matched with your answers. And it's a good place to start. We do like to take, like you've said, a deeper dive into things, but it's just a good way to take it. Sometimes it's fun for a whole team to take it and compare each other and see where they came out, to see how everybody is thinking about the company.
Right. So the questionnaire is designed so that the first person who fills it out is really setting up the questionnaire for their company, and then they can invite other people with an invitation to also answer the same questions on behalf of the company, and then the system will compile all the data for you together, and so you can compare and contrast the results and see how different people are thinking from inside your company. So agencies, also, if you're a marketing agency and you want to use this tool for your customers, it's an excellent way to give some insight as to how the key stakeholders in a company are thinking about their own marketing. Now, a benefit there is if you have a couple of people, like let's say you were talking about a really powerful, opinionated CEO with a director of marketing who's new to the company and a director of operations who has a third view. You got some problems here on trying to get the new director of marketing to go in a direction that is powerful when three individual personalities are kind of pushing and pulling in different directions. So this archetype idea, if you can get everybody on the same page through a very short and healthy discussion about what is going to be the best approach to take for the company, getting people on the same page is a very powerful thing, and the questionnaire is definitely a tool that will help you do that.
And it's free.
And it's free. Very good. Okay, well, Amy, I'm looking forward to next week's discussion. And until then, we invite everybody to take the questionnaire, and we will all talk to you soon.
Have fun.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.